Station number 15433.
Peter McAleese, side 10. Cranwell Barracks? Side 10. Peter McAleese, side 10. Cranwell Barracks?
Yeah, I got to
Cranwell Barracks. Barracks, yeah. Salisbury, Northern, or yeah. I don't know, yeah. Outskirts of Salisbury, yeah. Wherever.
I got there and I it was my first experience of Rhodesian SAS since I'd seen them in 62. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I got there and everybody looked extremely smart, you know. And I got in there and I went to the training office and I met this officer. And he says, who are you? I said, my name's Peter McAleese. Where have you been? I said, I was in the British Army. What rank did you hold? I said, Staff Sergeant. Yeah, we get used wankers here every day in the week, you know. And I thought, and he says, you're a bit of a skate man, you know, I know about you. And I said, there was no, you know, I said to myself, there was no need to be like that. And I suddenly, he was a decent guy. He was at the wind-up. He was a chap called Johnson. Anyway, I thought it was going to be like the British SAS. Mm. And, you know, for the first couple of weeks, we ran about with shorts on. And we're getting all sort of odd jobs, you know, like cleaning up the MT, cleaning, you know, old weapons that was in the armoury and... you know, the general messing about you get prior to being squatted. Mm. And I went there, and the other thing I noticed there was the treatment of the recruits there was, you know, they were intermention, you know, before you actually got the regiment. You know, if you wanted a coke, you had to go to the back door of the mess because you weren't allowed to be in the mess until you'd been badged, you know. But, you know, the actual conditions for us, you know, was you got the odd soft drink and that. So what we tended to do was go down to the infantry place down the road, mm-hmm. and save ourselves the aggravation. Anyway, you know, we're doing our thing and carrying on, and all of a sudden loads of recruits came in, young kids, you know.
Who else was with you? You were a transferee, were you?
No, there was a chap called Paddy Giblin came in. There was a few ex-regulars come in, and we all tended to, you know, speak to each other. Mm. And then next thing, all these recruits come in from Brady Barracks. And, you know, there was this sort of hysteria among these kids. You know, they're lining up stuff in beds, big long pieces of string, making sure every sock is on the string. You know, and I said, uh-oh, I said, what have I let myself in for here? You know, it was like being back in recruit company again. Mm. So we have an inspection, and, you know, the first week was a bit fairly quiet, and the first Saturday morning we'd been doing a little lesson in camouflage, and there was a chap called Phil Dunn, who really was a civilian with a uniform on. You know, when you roll your sleeves in the army, it's high up. His were always on his elbow, and there was always a sort of crease on them. And he was extremely casual, like only an Australian can be. And we'd been doing a lesson in camouflage on a Friday night and a Friday afternoon. This was Saturday morning, and there was two instructors, and they were sort of leapfrogging up, and one came to me and the other one passed me, and this one had stopped at this guy next to me called Phil Dunn, and he said, Dunn, show me your housewife. And he went, certainly, colour, certainly, mate. You know, opens the door and all his kit fell out the locker. And this guy, you know, threw forth, you know, a mouthful of obscenities towards Dunn, and as Dunn turned around, he's seen a piece of camouflage cream still in his ear, you know, and he went, you dirty, stinking foreigners, you know. And he had this sort of, they hated foreigners, you know. And the next thing, there was a Dutchman standing on the other side of me, and this one is actually shouting at Dunn. But the one who was shouting at Dunn, it was the other one who was actually getting worked up, can you see that? So he, this Dutch guy standing there, you know, he's got these sort of tinted glasses that you seem to get in the continent, and this guy's sort of building himself up, and this one's going, you dirty foreigners, we pay you fair out here, and what do? How do you reward us? You steal our aircraft, because some foreigners have stolen aircraft and gone to Botswana with it. Anyway, this one gets so worked up, he hits this Dutch guy, he goes, yeah, and he punches this Dutch chap, and the next thing, the two of them just started wrecking the room.
Who?
The two instructors. I mean, they just literally took everything, threw it all in the middle of the floor. There was beds, lockers, just all tossed in the middle. And there was just a big, massive pile there. And one of them burst out laughing, and two of them walked out of the room. And I went, this is insanity, you know. Anyway, they broke us up. By this time, they broke us up into three squads. And we sort of get down to the training, you know. And, of course, we go to PT the next morning. And I was warned about the PT, I will harangue you, you know. You'll get a hard time off him. So, you know, he's an American PTI. And, you know, sort of, this is the format. You get in PT, he calls you to attention. And he goes, put your hands up, the new guys. You put your hand up. Where are you from, new guy? I'm from Great Britain, sir. There, couple. Been in the army before, new guy? Yes, couple. What regiment were you in? I was in the parachute regiment in the SAS couple. Well, I've heard that one before. You're just another wanker. You're no good. Rhodesia doesn't need you, you know. Anyway, I knew it was coming, so I just fell back in. Next morning, you know, put your hands up, the new guys. There's an American guy there. Says, what's your name? He said, Bill somebody. Where are you from? The US of A, couple. We got ourselves another wank yank, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Rhodesia doesn't need you, you yanks, you come out here. Now, this guy's an American himself. Anyway, he had to go out in front of the class and get this sort of haranguing, you know. And he really rips into this guy. The guy came and fell in next to me. He says, I never saw him in a NAM, you know. And the whole training, they tended to do it different for the British Army in that they take a weapon and get it out of the way in one day, whereas with the British Army, it was over the period of a week.
Mm.
They'd just say, take the SLR, you spend a day on it, and that was it. The machine gun, you'd spend a day on it, that was it. Mm. The instruction wasn't too bad.
Mm.
But by the same token, it wasn't great. And the basic training. And everywhere you went...
Why? Because it just was too quick or unprofessional? Or
no, I wouldn't say it was unprofessional. It was quick. They were pushing guys through. And everywhere you went, you ran. You went to the ranges once a week. You ran back from the ranges. You know, the standard of fitness there was good, you know. Mm. We then finished the basic training, and they said they were taking us up for bush training to a place called Gwy River Mine.
Mm.
So we drove up to the other side of Bulawayo, and it's between Bulawayo and Victoria Falls.
Mm-hmm.
So we pulled into this place, and I entered into what was probably some of the best training I've ever had. Everything was done live. It was live ammunition all the time, live attacks, and you know your battle inoculation was awful. It was good, you know. And you were out the time. The training was extremely practical. The food left a wee bit to be desired. It was good food. But, you know, we were on the go all the time, and there was no sort of... I think we could have done with some, like, vitamin tablets, because everybody was busting out in boils and whatnot. You know, we were getting run down. I mean, we'd been on the go for the best part of 10 weeks, and there was no leave. You know, the main thing was to get you out of training. So we carried on up there, and the big day was called the Sticky Bun Run. We used to get into Wanky to get the rations once a week, and the kids used to jump in the back of the truck, they'd go and buy sweets, you know, cream buns, everything. You know, just, they were only young kids. And then Gwy was spent getting us ready for selection. So, and the training at Gwy, it was good. It was an awful lot of bush training, an awful lot of reconnaissance. You know, it was practical stuff. Movement in the bush, learning how to do sweeps, and every day the training get heavier and heavier and heavier to get you ready for selection. We finished up, we were up there for a month,
mm-hmm.
and the ship is down to Bulawayo to do selection. And the selection in the Rhodesian SES isn't like the British SES, but it's got the same aim. It's just that you get up two different streets to get to the roundabout. Mm-hmm. Can you see that? So we get in the selection, and they give us a brick, and they says, this is your brick. This is your loved one, and this will be you with you for the duration of this course. And everybody had to give the brick a name, you know.
Well, how big was the brick?
It was a house brick.
Ordinary house brick, yeah.
You had to carry a cigarette and carry your rifle. So,
not in a pack?
No, it was just a rifle and a brick, and we were in light order. Mm. And this is what they call the Rev. Right? All you got is a T-shirt, plimsolls, and that one. So I said, right, what's the name of your brick? Everybody called it a girl's name. Mm. And this Marine, and an ex-guy goes, what's the name of your brick? He went, Alpha. He says, Alpha, why have you called your brick Alpha? I was a Marine, sir, you know. Guy called Jim Maguire. So we then go and play football for about 2¾ hours with a brick and a rifle. And you know, you did play with it, and I never realised it could be so grueling. And I was fit. I was probably one of the fitter guys on it. So play football, and then they get us to the end of a football pitch. And when I blow the whistle, I want to see you up at the football pitch and back here, and the last man must be in position in 30 seconds. Beep, you're not going to make it. You know, we're exhausted, you got a brick and a rifle. Come back here. What's wrong with you guys? You're obviously not getting it together and you're to mark time all the time. Beep, and this goes on for another couple of hours, right? So the next thing is, they took us from there and got us into the gym. And they've got us beating the shit out of each other for a couple of hours.
Milling.
Yeah. I'm milling. Then they produced these massive shells from somewhere, you know, big 5x5 shells. We're doing shell PT with these, right? So then they took us out with another game at football. And they say, rest, and you go, lie back. You could feel yourself getting into your sleep, and they go, right back up. They take you back out and you do something else. And then the most insane thing we did, they got us on these parallel bars. And they say, you're going to do pull-ups. I mean, you can only do... I mean, this is... we've been going for about 12 hours now.
So you're into the night almost now, are you?
We're into the night, the beginning of the night, so they've got us pulling ourselves up. I mean, you can't... you finish up, you're just hanging there like that. You know, the guy's going, pull yourself. Anyway, and if you take a thing too serious and you try to give it maximum effort, you're going to burn yourself out. Mm. So everybody's sort of, you know, going along. And we... what happened then? We played another game at football.
Mm, okay.
And then we did a chariot race.
Right.
We did a chariot race where we've got the instructors on the back of these trailers for vehicles, and we're racing up and down an old piece of airport, you know. Get up and down there, and the instructors. Then they take us in and they sit us all down, and this guy goes, okay, no, tell me why. They got us in a circle, and somebody said to me, they need 25 guys for the squadrons. So we started off with about, that must have been 70, 80 guys. And you just stood there and they went, you pull your rifle and you go, shout out your regimental number and your name, and then stand at ease, and the next guy would stand to attention. And we just went like that, and this went on for hours. Just answering your number, rank, and name, and this circle. And you could see a lot of guys going, oh, this is not for me, you know. And a lot of guys jacked at that phase because they couldn't see the sense in it. They then, by this time it was dark and it was getting cold. Now, we haven't stopped doing anything physical, so this took us all, sat us down, and they let us have a drink of water.
Yeah. Hold on.
Sorry. So they sat us all down and they started counting us out. Now we're down to about 25, but they've broken us up into syndicates, and I think it was about 13 in the group I was in. And the guy went, so he puts on 13 steaks and he starts frying them, and we're all standing there like that. And he's going, yeah, how do you like your steak done? And deep down we knew we weren't getting them, but you know, there was an element of hope there that we might, you know. So then she's right outside and start on the PT again. So by this time we carry on, it's about 1-2 o'clock in the morning and it's freezing, it's the month of July, which is the beginning of the winter. All standing there, she's right to the swimming pool. So we've still got the brick and the rifle, right, we're still carrying these with us, and you've got to slide down the slide into the cold pool with your brick. Now, there is time we're naked. You know, there isn't a stitch of clothing on it. And there's nothing worse than sliding down a slide and there's no water on the slide. Can you see that? This time our backsides are all raw. And I fell into the water and my brick broke in half. You know, I hit the edge of the pool. And the next thing is, McAleese has broken his loved one. Now, I mean, I'm 33 years of age. McAleese, you've shamed your woman. So they go and get me a new brick and I've got to bury my old brick. And they're all standing and you can see the guys are going, what's getting on here? This is insanity. Right. So they took us away then. And, you know, we're marching around naked around the swimming pool in a sort of funeral procession with bury brick. And then they did something that I thought was, it was good. They took us into back into the gymnasium and they said, they'd done two games, it was called the baseball game, and they give you a piece of paper and it says Bill, you know, and there was a list of things put up. Bill is the pitcher who goes out with John's sister. John is in the third base. Can you see that? And you know, now John's cousin is the baseman on the first base, and you know, so and so is the umpire, and what you had to do was work out who was where. And you, I mean, you were extremely shattered.
Sure.
And, and the secret was to draw on the bases and put the names next to it. There was that, and then there was another game called Who Owned a Zebra. You know, there was a zebra passed through all these different people, and so and so sold it to so and so, who bred it with another one. And it was good. And actually, I could see the reason in it. It was to see how you were thinking under pressure, which I thought was great. And then they come in. This, we've been going. It carries on all through the next day.
And you still have no sleep?
We still had no sleep. And they're shouting and bawling. And, you know...
all right.
And they get downed. We're down about 25, but the 25, they're not going to give in. They can carry on like that for days. They're not going to give in. So the night starts.
Second night.
The second night. And they're abuse all getting thrown at us with this PTI. So then, right, get your kids... By this time,
but they were taking it in shifts, presumably.
Aye, they were going to the bed, yeah.
Yeah.
So we've left our rucksacks here. You know how you always get goodies in your rucksack. All the rucksacks have been looted. All the goodies have been taken. And there's no food. There's nothing. So they give us our rucksacks, and they say, right, get that log. So they've got this massive, massive telegraph pole that you could only be produced in Africa. I think it was a teak tree or something. Right. You know. So they get us off and get out of here, you heap of dung, you know. So we're on the road there and they give us some toggle ropes and they say, right, and they throw these three maps down in the road. Take that map to Bambata Caves. We want to see you there tomorrow morning, you know. So we then join the maps together and we're over in this map here. There's an adjoining map there and Bambata Caves is up in this map. So the map above it is missing to stop you going cross country. So I looked at it, and I could, you know, I worked out roads and that we're going to cross. And I says, there's a method in the madness here. I says, we're going to go across country. But nobody's ever reached Bambata Caves. Can you see that? Nobody's ever got the log there, you know. So we then got there, and I says, right. We'd gone for another 24 hours, and they stopped us. You heap of dung, yous, haven't you? Who do you call yourself? You think you're soldiers? You know, a normal thing. So then we then actually started the selection after this sort of haranguing. And they gave us a series of points to go to. And it wasn't a bad selection, but you had to do it in pairs because, you know, if terrorists were there, it's just so as they know what happened. And we did it around the area of the Matopis, which is outside Bulawayo, where Cecil Rhodes is buried. And we finished up on the fifth day, it was a 5-day selection, and the morning we got there and finished about just after lunch, and we were told who passed and failed, and you know, I just sat down.
How many passed or didn't pass?
25 passed out, the 90 odd.
And there were those are the 25 that kept going.
Aye.
Yeah, right. Did anybody drop out of that last little lot?
Yes, one guy, a guy called Bruce Firkin. Because once you get over that rev, you know, it's just a case of pacing yourself then. And the other thing about the Rhodesian SAS, everything was done outside. You know, there was no, like, going back to a barrack room. When you got to the RV, they say, sleep over there. Can you see that? And the first thing he did was, if you didn't clean your weapon right away, they went down in a boot. Can you see that? And the other thing was, your feet were in a terrible mess there. Blisters.
Okay, so what, were you assigned to a squadron, or how did it work?
No, I went away and I had to do a parachute course again after that.
Really?
So we did a parachute course. We finished the parachute course and says, we've got to get these guys to the bush, these men. So we, in actual fact, we were parachuting in the morning and training in the afternoon. Can you see that?
Yeah.
It's a fairly exhausting thing because you've got to be up, say, 3 o'clock to jump at five sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then they had us in the afternoon and we covered all the foreign weapons. We did the sort of the Tokarov, the Makarov, the AK, the AKM, the RPD, the PKM, the 12.7 and the 14mm. We did the full family. And then they had to take us out, they took us out to Lake McIlwain, where we did a canoeing phase. We did about 2-3 days on canoes. And then we were called back in and they said, you're going to the bush. Yeah. No. We were doing the canoeing in the afternoon, that was it. And I hurt myself on a parachute jump. I jumped with a container and I landed on top of the container and I hurt my back. So I was still a bit sore, but they said, you're going to the bush. So we went up to a place called Kanyemba, right in the very corner of Rhodesia, the northeast corner. Went up there and then we drove down this place called Mine Alley. And it was just, there was vehicles lying all over the place that had been mined. I went into the edge of what was called an old keep. You know, it was an old protected village. And we started doing operations into the Mozambique.
So what, this was, what year was this now?
This is 77.
Right.
In July. And we went in there and it was my first patrol in.
So you were only a troopie then, or
I was
a trooper?
Trooper, yeah.
So... So what unit were you in then now, officially?
I'm in the Rhodesian SAS, I'm in A Squadron.
Right.
A Troop, C Squadron.
Right. So, you're on patrol in Eastern, and you're going into Western Mozambique.
Yeah. So we patrolled into Mozambique. And
so how many were you in the stick?
Four.
Four, plus you.
Yeah.
Right.
And we ambushed some Frelimo.
Okay.
And now what happened then was I didn't, you know, a lot of the kit you had in Rhodesia, you had to buy it. And I didn't, you know, I thought you get issued with water bottles and I didn't have enough water bottles, only had about four. And I didn't realise that, you know, you needed more bottles than that. Anyway, I was giving it the old British Army touch, you know, just a little sip at a time. I was getting terribly dehydrated. Anyway, to cut a long story short, we had a contact. And lucky for me, the guy that I shot was carrying a big massive bottle of water, you know. It was about 4 litres in there. Straightening my rucksack with it, you know.
So what happened? You bumped to patrol or what?
What happened, we laid an ambush.
Right.
And as we were pulling at the ambush, I was the last man in, coming out. And I seen guys coming into the ambush as we were pulling out because we were pulling back to lie up for the night. Can you see that was starting to get dark? And we banjoed these guys. One, two, we get three.
Out of?
Five. And they were Frelimo.
But Frelimo, were you?
They were aiding Zanma, can you see that? They got it as well, you know. Yeah, go on.
Okay, yeah, sorry, no question.
So we came out after the operation and went back in and we laid another ambush.
Did you not resent being, after all your experience, qualifications and seniority, age, being just a trooper again? I would have thought most
people... I didn't, to be honest with you, I didn't, but I found out that some of the Rhodesian NCOs were a wee bit immature, you know. You know, rank meant an awful lot to them and they were impressed by rank, you know. It didn't cut with me, so I didn't give... You know, when the sergeant major said something to me, You know, I looked at him and I done it. You know, there was none of this, you know, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. But these young boys thought it, can you see that? They were, I mean, they were the same as I was at 17. So we came back out and we did another ambush. We went back and did this other ambush. And we laid claymores out and we laid it just before first light. And an old guy came walking by and he said to me, he looked in and I could see him. And he'd spotted one of the claymores and the guy says to me, shoot him. And I fired him and I deliberately missed him. I just couldn't do it. You know, it wasn't in me to shoot a civilian. Anyway, we pulled out and I get pulled in. Why didn't you shoot the guy? I says, well, you know, if I shot him or I didn't shoot him, we were still compromised. You know, the fact is, he's seen it. And if I shot and missed him, the fact is, all you'd have done, and I shot and hit him, the difference was one dead civilian. But they couldn't understand that, you know. I came out from that operation. I got came back to Salisbury and I was put on a vehicle operation into Mozambique. And we had these vehicles made up with a 50 caliber machine guns. We had a pig with a 20 millimeter cannon. Some had twin MEGs on them, and we went into the Mozambique. And it looks good, you know, driving about with vehicles with all this equipment on them, but in actual fact, it really is hard work. You know, for example, you're driving all day and at night time you're repairing punctures, can you see that? And the other time, especially in Rhodesian bush, you're flanking the vehicles all the time in case you run into an ambush. But the great thing about taking the vehicles is you have an abundance of ammunition and your operating time is that greater. So it was about 20 odd of us there.
How many vehicles?
Four. 26 of us, 20 operators and 6 drivers and mechanics. We went in there and we laid mines and mined all the road, and then we went out on an ambush. So we parked the vehicles up and we went out on this ambush. We ambushed some guys. There was 2 came into the ambush and we killed both of them. And it was terribly unfortunate. We found a note on the chaps. One of the guys had actually been wounded inside Rhodesia. The other one was bringing them back, and by the time we shot them, they were sort of 20 kilometres from the hospital, because they'd actually come hundreds of miles. So what happened then was...
what was your intelligence on that you knew where to hit? Or
no, you could hit them all the time, because we knew where everything was. Right. Now, what happened then is we always knew where the camps were, the bases. So we were called back from that one. And this is 1977. And they shipped us up, we came straight in it, they said, right, get your kit, you're going up to Kariba. So we immediately went up to Kariba, prepared for another operation, and one of the guys had done a recce, and there'd been a raid done into Rhodesia. And they were coming across the Zambezi. So they were at a place called Namumba Farm.
Oh, in Zambia.
In Zambia, yeah. So we crossed the river.
The Kariba River?
We're not Kariba area. It's the Zambezi River.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, right. Zambia. Yeah.
Right. So we crossed the Zambezi on canoes. And we lined up. And come first light, we hit this camp. And there was 17 guys, and out of the 17, we killed 14. Got quite a bit of equipment and get picked up. And then we came back down into Salisbury again. We then came from there, and this is 1977. We went to go on a deployment, and the deployment was cancelled. They say, go home, there's something else pending. And we started, the Rhodesians were fairly good at this, they started a bit of disinformation, and they said that we were going to attack Malvernia, you know. There's a place in the Mozambique called Malvernia, And there's, okay. And the Rhodesian side. The funny thing is, the station in the Mozambican side is called Van Malvernia, and the station in our side is called Villa Salazar.
Okay.
Aye, so yeah. It was down in that area. So you know, we're saying, I wonder what it is. We're going to take over the town and whatnot. So they said, right. They took us out to the airport. We got to the airport, and they says, took us into a big area, and it was all caged off. So they started bringing food to us, and I says, this doesn't look right. They started giving us free soft drinks and that, and you were allowed 2 bottles of beer free. I says, there's something afoot here. So we walked over to this hangar, which had a briefing room, and one of the PGIs came walking out, and he said, you want to see that? So we got in there, and they had one of the most beautiful models I've ever seen. What they had was the shape of the ground. And the target, and in actual fact, it was transparent, and you could even see the contour lines on it. Can you see that? They'd built these in as well, and it was for a complex called Chimoio, mm-hmm. which was 90 kilometres inside the Mozambique, and there was 5,000 gooks in there. So we got this briefing, and it was a real professional briefing. Mm. It was given to us by a little chap called Major Robinson, and he was the squadron commander at the time. And, you know, we got there, and at the end of it, and there was 150 of us total, and we were doing the initial drop, and the RLI were going to bring in chopper troops, so there was 32 choppers as well, and 150 paratroops. And at the end of the briefing, he turned around and he says, SAS, no, RLI, I wish you good luck.